Welcome back to the Villain Edit, where two supposedly smart people talk about the dumb television shows they watch. I'm Monty Ashley.
And I'm Rias Hall.
Rias, what's the dumbest thing you watched this week?
The dumbest thing I watched was probably the dog. I took her to the dog park. Nothing.
That dog's an idiot.
It's true.
The dumbest thing I watched was The Video Dead, which I watched about a half hour of on this channel that's our TiVo's default right now.
Oh, this morning I accidentally watched half of the new Amityville Horror while thinking it was the old Amityville Horror because the video quality on that channel is so bad.
It's like they have a bank of VHS tapes in their office. They're just pressing play.
It does. It looks like a VHS tape. So I thought, oh, old Amityville Horror. And then I thought, Chloe Grace Moretz isn't that old.
So this is not a show about the Comet channel, but I just want to say I really enjoy the Comet channel's dedication to just, like, we've stumbled upon it when it was a 1977 one-star rated horror movie.
Yeah, they are literally just showing whatever crap they could find.
There were two Dr. Goldfoot movies in a row the other night.
Yeah.
I like the current state of cable where you can get super niche things like that, like the El Rey Network that's just stuff Robert Rodriguez wants to watch.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily what I want to watch, but I like that there's something that's so defined as Robert Rodriguez's id.
Yeah.
Like, here's the channel for kung fu movies, blaxploitation, in-depth interviews with directors for some reason.
And Lucha Libre.
Oh, yeah, and some Lucha Libre. So, getting to the specific dumb shows that The Villain Edit is about, Face Off.
Face All right.
Off. So they were down to 7 people this week. Super Team 1 of 4 people and Super Team 2 of 3 people.
And they had another group challenge.
Yep. Now, you very rarely see uneven teams like this. But what's weird is I was certain the whole time that somebody from the bigger team was going to go home just to balance things out.
Right.
So they didn't talk in the show about whether it would be unfair that one team had 4 people and one team had 3 people and they had the same work to do. Luckily, Super Team 1 had to throw out all of their work because their witches were not satisfying to anybody.
No, their witches were trying a little too hard.
They were trying to make witches.
Okay, so what happened is that each team got a different spell book and they had to come up with the name of their spell. One team chose the spell name Suffocating Sage of Willow, which kind of sounds like something that a cartoon cat would say if he was swearing.
I didn't like that because it starts off alliterative and then gives up.
And what the hell is Sage of Willow? They're different plants. Sage is a plant. Willow is a plant.
And you can probably be suffocated by either one. You can be suffocated by almost anything, as Rias is demonstrating right now. Such as her dedication to...
My dedication to this show is such that just by making fun of Suffocating Sage of Willow, it almost got me.
So I guess you're feeling
not
pretty
just silly, real,
yeah.
Kids.
And what was the other one called?
The Shadow of the Spiteful Serpent.
And that one, they named it that because one of their 4 ingredients was snake-related.
Yeah.
And then they ended up throwing out the snake aspect entirely. Their original concept was, these are subterranean rat witches that have been
cursed to turn into snakes.
Yeah, now they're afraid of the dark, so they're forced into the light where they turn into snakes. And they eventually realized that was way too much stuff and didn't make any sense.
It didn't make any sense.
So instead of that, they got rid of the snake aspect. Now they were just rat witches, witches turning into rats, which is fine. I found it pretty boring.
Yeah. It was pretty boring. They did 3 people each in different phases of transforming into rats.
But very similar phases, I thought. Like,
well, they have to look like they're from the same coven.
Well, the other team didn't do that. They just said, this is 3 different covens that have all come together.
And each one of them is suffering from a curse causing them to turn into a tree.
Yeah. And they had one I really liked. That was the one with the sticks for hair.
Yeah,
That one really looked like it combined witchiness and woodenness.
They're really good at doing wood textures. Remember when they did their Ice Queen? That's the same team that did the another treat person.
That's one of the problems on this show is if you're really good at something, you can do it twice, maybe three times. And if you do it past that, they feel like you're in a rut.
Right. I think Logan did that tree witch.
Yeah.
Let's see.
So it was three against three, three witches against three witches. I wasn't that thrilled with any of the results, to be perfectly honest, except the one I just mentioned with the cool stick hair.
Yeah, the one with the cool stick hair had a great nose.
So Super Team 2, that's the one with Emily and Tyler on it.
And Logan.
And Logan. And to a lesser extent, Logan. They won, and that meant Sig, George, Ben, and Evan lost. Specifically, Ben went home, which I got nothing against Ben. I like Ben. But he's been really low energy.
He has. He seemed really sad this season. Like, he's going through some stuff. Yeah. We love you, Ben. Be better. Be happier.
At this point, I feel that very clearly my top three are Sig, George, and Emily.
Absolutely. Totally agree. I like the way that when they're working, even though they have four people doing four different things, Sig and George are constantly checking up with them. They're constantly making sure that everybody's work matches so that it's got a cohesive flow to it.
Yeah.
I felt like the tree team did not do that. One of the tree witches looked like it was made out of stone to me. It was a weird bluish color.
That was Emily's.
Yeah.
She at one point said she was largely working on her own. She did get Tyler to weigh in a little. And I liked that because the arbitrary pairings from the first part of the season still matter a little. Like,
right.
Although she's on a super team, Tyler's her real partner.
Right.
And we don't know what's going to happen next, if they're going to stick with super teams or make Logan and Evan team up, or at some point they might actually just go to full individual challenges.
Yeah, who knows?
It's a mystery. And
it's going to be wildly exciting to find out.
Yeah.
Wildly.
Wildly. Let's get through MasterChef Junior real quick.
Oh, I didn't even take notes on MasterChef Junior.
Were
there crying children at the end of it?
Of course there were. Here's how. It was a very standard MasterChef Junior episode. Started with pie shenanigans. Kids had to make pies, which really just meant pour some glop into pie shells.
Right, basically, they were given some glop and some whipped cream, and whoever could make the most perfect-looking pies within a certain time frame was the winner.
Right. And this is sort of related to cooking, but mostly it's related to shouting and panicking. And, of course, results in the judges getting hit with pies, which the kids seem to find fun.
The viewers do not. I am so tired of seeing Gordon Ramsay covered in whipped cream. There's probably ladies out there who would never be tired of that, but I am not one of them.
And they always have to do this thing where Gordon walks out one door and then walks in another completely clean, and the kids act like it magically just happened.
Yeah, which, like, Gordon hasn't been gone for an hour while we stand here under the hot lights.
this aspect, I do not care for it. Then we learned about how we were going to be using blow torches. Children fanned themselves lest they faint from sheer excitement at seeing a creme brulee.
Well, I've done that.
The guest judge was Richard Blaze, who I think is from early Top Chef season. I like him okay. Then the children cooked with blowtorches, which is always terrifying.
Yeah, it's really scary watching a little tiny hand trying to control a blowtorch.
I don't know that I should be trusted with a blowtorch.
I think I should. I should absolutely be trusted with a blowtorch. Oh, I'll cook. I'll cook some stuff.
And then, as with every episode, it ended with crying children. The bottom four were Jasmine, Sid, not Sydney, Sid, those are two girls, and Mark and Shane. Shane is Shane the Train, and Mark is that kid who's wearing a baseball cap backwards on the back of his head.
Yeah, and he thinks he's he was like the meat master in that one episode. I'm the meat master, I can cook anything, and then he screwed up all the steaks.
So
that guy.
Jasmine and Sid went home because nobody remembers anything about them, whereas Mark and Shane have a lot of personality.
Mm-hmm.
Which on MasterChef Junior kind of means that they are good at repeating their gimmick.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Shane can make it sound totally plausible that he mentions that he's from Texas in every sentence.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I think Shane's good. Like, that
kid's
Shane's cook.
A good cook.
So I didn't think he should go home anyway, but it was clear that Mark and Shane weren't both going to go home, and in fact, neither of them went home.
Right. Mark and Shane are like, we recognize them, so they get to stay.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you want to do Drag Race or Cosplay Melee next?
I'm so excited. I don't know.
Let's do Drag Race, because it happened first.
Okay.
Season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race is here. The first episode happened. We watched it. It was great.
There were a lot of things I liked about it.
One of the best guest judges ever.
Yeah, I loved Lady Gaga as a judge.
So, first of all, she did this hilarious gimmick where she pretended to be a drag queen during the introductions, making everybody wonder, who is that? Is that an amazing Lady Gaga impersonator?
Right. When they were doing the drag queen walk-ins and all the queens came in and introduced themselves, then the last drag queen came in and she looked... And then they were like, oh my God, what an amazing Lady Gaga impersonator. But surprise! It was Lady Gaga.
And that's good fun. But the part I really loved about her was in RuPaul's Drag Race Untucked, which is the now YouTube series, which shows... The queens hanging out while they wait for the judges right. to deliberate.
Yeah, it gets you a little slice of... It's a little slice of life of backstage.
And it's really good. Like, Charlie Hides is this drag queen, 52 years old. Does not look 52, by the way.
No, Charlie looks pretty good.
Charlie's gimmick is YouTube videos, sort of parodying...
Like song parody YouTube videos, but they're not great.
Like the Katy Perry Roar, it's called Whore... And it's from the standpoint of Kris Jenner. So we watched that.
Yeah, and it's kind of gross.
However.
They're all really slut-shaming and it annoys the crap out of me.
However, in Untucked, Charlie was fantastic. Everybody was whooping it up, having a great time. And Charlie saw that James Mansfield wasn't saying anything, got everyone to shut up, and checked in on James to make sure, are you okay, honey? And I really like that.
Yeah, I liked that too. I think that... It made me feel a lot better about Charlie. I think Charlie's a great person.
Yeah.
He seems really nice. I'm just not entirely sure that Charlie's a great performer.
Yeah. But I will say Charlie was correct. James was being really introverted, and it looked to me like James was really overwhelmed by how loud it is.
Even from the moment James entered, when they did the entry thing and James came in with his puppet... He looked like he didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
He looked like, oh my God, have I even come into the right room? He had a puppet, which he was trying to hide behind.
And compare that to my favorite entrance, Sasha Velour, who walked in, stood in the middle of the room, and just shrieked for 15 seconds, and it was the best thing.
Yeah, Sasha just came in and screamed, and everybody looked terrified, and I also screamed along because I was so delighted by what had happened.
Like, normally what people do is they come in with their catchphrase, like, look out, bitches, I'm here! And Sasha Velour just went a completely different direction, and it was awesome.
Let's see, what else do I...
Anyway, during Untucked, what I wanted to get to was that Lady Gaga came back and said hello to everybody, and everybody freaked out. And then Lady Gaga had specific notes for each person, because one of the performances was that they had to do drag inspired by Lady Gaga dresses. And Lady Gaga first gave really empathetic feedback. It wasn't, you did this wrong. It's, you're so beautiful.
But
you can work... on this aspect of your performance.
Yeah.
And you don't need to worry about being beautiful because you are. So first, it's compliment, thing to work on, compliment. And second, it wasn't this was bad. It was all actionable advice. This is what you can do to address this note I have.
Right.
And she did this for everybody and it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really, I really liked that. I thought that was a great critique. And I would love to see her back as a guest judge every week.
Yeah.
More
than Ross Matthews.
Yeah. So I've just got a lot of notes on their original entrances.
Oh, let's hear it.
Let's see. First, I've got Peppermint enters first. ... Valentina comes in and is Latina.
I liked her look. She had kind of a bolero thing going, but she had kind of a MasterChef Junior level commitment to her note of I'm Latina, which it's great, But especially on Drag Race, lots of people are Latina.
Yeah.
Eureka talked a lot of shit.
Eureka's got a quick wit, which I appreciate.
She's super funny. One thing I thought was funny about Eureka was that during Untucked, she had everybody give their top three or bottom three because she was just trying to get the conversation going. Uh-huh. And one of her bottom three was Nina. And she gave a little thing where she doesn't think Nina stands out and has a lot of work to do in order to progress in the competition. Nina won.
Yeah, Nina actually won that competition, so that was kind of funny.
Yeah, Eureka is not totally dialed into what RuPaul is looking for.
The queens that I like the least are Pheromone and the one from Florida. What's her name?
I don't know. Pheromone is pretty. May not have much going on besides that.
Exactly.
One thing that bothered me, so this is the first HD season. And one of the people we picked to be on our team is Aja.
Because we watched a lot of videos of Aja, and that girl can lip sync.
Aja is a great performer. Based on what we saw in HD, Aja needs a lot of work on her makeup skills right away.
She's got a little John Waters action going on there, and I don't know if I don't think it's intentional. But yeah, her makeup looks pretty rough.
So I'm hoping that she's being set up for a redemption edit. That's my excuse.
I hope so.
I think she's in the bottom three. We didn't see any lip syncing. If there is lip syncing, I think she's going to do it.
Trinity Taylor is the other one I don't like. I don't like Trinity Taylor, and I don't like Pheromone. I feel like they both have the same gimmick, and their gimmick is, look, we look like real women.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's...
I wasn't crazy about Kimora Black. I didn't think the looks were that great, and the interviews were mean, but not as funny as Eureka.
Yeah, they were just kind of bitchy, but they weren't amusingly bitchy. They were just, I'm everybody's sexual fantasy. Like, no, you aren't, sweetie.
Yeah. You may be very specific sexual fantasy, and that's better than being everyone's sexual fantasy.
Right. Also, Kimora's another one of those Vegas queens, and their drag queen culture there is really, really different from the drag queen culture, which I am more familiar with.
They talked about that a bit in the episode, where in some cities, like Eureka's from Tennessee, you have the drag family, and when you become a new drag queen, you get your drag mother who shows you what to do,
right,
and like shepherds you around.
Yeah.
But in Vegas, if you're new, you're just some new bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cutthroat. And that doesn't sound as fun. Also, I don't like the videos you get from Las Vegas drag queens as much.
Yeah, there seems to be like this one club. And it's got a little tiny stage.
They might just be the only club with the sense to put their stuff up on YouTube, in which case, props
to
them.
Yeah, because I know that there are big fancy drag shows at the casinos.
Yeah, your showgirls type things.
But it looks like the little tiny drag clubs, they're not great.
From what we could see on YouTube, and we looked pretty hard, it's largely just walking back and forth, some choreography, and picking up dollars.
And lip syncing.
Whereas I'm going to call us snobs. We like to see a little. I like to see a concept. I want to see a man dressed up as Ms. Pac-Man doing a one-man show.
Have I got some news for you? We actually went and saw that show, and it was amazing.
It's so good. If you're in Seattle and you see it at the Rebar,
I think that they're talking about taking it down to Portland at some
point. Oh, that's great.
So keep an eye out. It stars a guy named Scott Shoemaker. He is to be watched. Because he'll take your wallet. Totally will take your wallet.
It's a great show. The premise is that Ms. Pac-Man has had a life of drugs and pill popping ever since the video game stopped being popular. So now it's like a Judy Garland special where he'll tell stories, then he'll do a song, and most of the songs are like video game themed. So there's a spot where Ms. Pac-Man talks about how the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles got her into licking toads, and that leads into Love is a Battle Toad.
Yeah. It goes like that. It was super funny, and it's...
I like that level of absurdism and talent coming through, which is why I'm leaning more towards Nina and Sasha.
Yeah, I think so too. And by the way, also my bias.
Nina looked great, had two hilarious cartoon looks.
Yeah, she entered as Mickey Mouse. Then she was supposed to do a piece representing where she was from, and she basically turned her head into a giant peach.
And that exhausted her makeup-wise, so her Lady Gaga look was had her head covered in fabric, which could have been bad, but she also really accentuated hilarious fake breasts and butt and did a lot of bopping around, which was one of the only times that I felt somebody took the Gaga look and added some character
and
to it.
Brought their own character into it, which I love.
And that's why Nina won.
Right.
Now at the end,
well, I feel like James Mansfield tried that, but his Lady Gaga character just kind of, it just didn't work.
Yeah,
he was sad and drunk.
He was doing a exhausted, drunk Lady Gaga, which Lady Gaga kind of liked and said, I was so tired when we did that photo shoot. That's probably what I looked like between shots. Lady Gaga had the best commentary on each one. She was overwhelmed with every single look, like, oh, I did wear that dress. Yeah. At one point, she said, Donna Versace made that for me. And of course, RuPaul
immediately corrected her by saying, Versace.
Everybody enjoys that. So then there was a 14th queen that came back. Nobody knows who it is. There are some theories.
I think it's Cynthia from the last season that had to go. Cynthia Lee Fontaine had to leave her season because she had cancer. And everyone liked her. She was Miss Congeniality. All of the other queens loved her. To the point where Acid Betty, I know, after the show ended, flew to where Cynthia was having treatment to stay with her and take care of her. So I think they're bringing Cynthia back.
Because there aren't that many other people that have left in the middle of a season. It sure doesn't look like Willem or Adore.
No, it's definitely...
Adore is not getting another shot. I would love to see Willem back. I don't think that's happening either.
We just happen to love Willem. That's all.
We have tastes. And, and we opinions. Have tastes. So there was no lip sync. No elimination. It was kind of a cut short episode.
Yeah.
Now, before we get to Cosplay Melee, I want to briefly do a programming note. We're not going to talk about My Big Fat Fabulous Life because I think Rias doesn't like it when I complain so much about a show she enjoys.
No, I feel like I really like watching that show, but I don't feel like it's a show that leaves a lot for discussion. It's pretty straightforward. We're going to see what happens this week, and then there's going to be another dance battle or whatever. Right. And I really like the show, but I don't feel like it's a show that's competitive or particularly lends itself to the format that we have set up.
So we, or at least Rias, or me if I'm in the room, are going to keep watching it. Not going to talk about it anymore, unless something crazy happens.
Right.
Luckily, I feel like we do have shows to watch now. The television season is kicking on again. Tomorrow, The Amazing Race is coming back.
Are we going to watch that?
I'm thinking of it. They recorded this episode, this season, a year ago. I'm going to watch the beginning and then immediately get angry at the gimmick this season, which is nobody has met each other before the race, and they're all getting paired up randomly when they hit the mat.
Paired teams. I will watch this season. I don't know if I want to talk about it much on the show because I feel like with so many people in the competition in Drag Race to keep up with, that's going to take up a lot of our time.
Well, I kind of like not talking about the A-list shows unless we need to. Lots of people talk about Survivor. We're here to talk about Cosplay Melee, which not enough people are on that.
Right.
The other programming note...
We're a niche market.
Yeah. The other programming note is that Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman just signed a deal with NBC for a show called The Handmaid Project.
Eee!
And it's a competition crafting show with expert judges.
I, myself, am a huge fan of competition crafting shows.
Now, this is 100% on brand for us. If Craft Corner Deathmatch were somehow still going on, by the way, hunt out Craft Corner Deathmatch. It is hilarious.
Yeah, it was hosted by Jason Jones, and it was my dream show. I would have kicked so much butt on that show.
We even watched that Tori Spelling Craft show.
Yeah, I can't remember what that one was even called.
It wasn't great. It wasn't great. Oh, it was just called Craft Wars.
Oh, we watched Craft Wars. But I think that right now my favorite crafty show is definitely going to be Cosplay
Melee.
Yeah,
let's get to that. Cosplay Melee, right? This week, it was Game of Thrones. So, again, they're allowed to say the property, but they're not doing specific characters.
Did we talk about last week's?
Yeah, we did.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
I'm certain we did. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this week it's Game of Thrones.
We got retweeted by the executive producer.
Oh.
Hello!
Hey, you're awesome!
Hey, if you're listening to this because you are on Cosplay Melee this episode, we think you're great. We were cheering for all of you.
I'm gonna...
Rise is looking up her notes. There were...
All right, here's the problem with my notes. Right now, there are so many little hearts drawn on them because I love the show so much that they're almost illegible. I was a little excited.
All right, I'll do the play-by-play.
Part of it made me cry.
I'll do the facts. You jump in with the color commentary.
All right.
There were four competitors. Ruth, Edgar, Jennifer, and Emily. Ruth, we saw her dressed as Shredder and talked a lot about how she was here to represent plus-size people.
And what she mean, and that's awesome, first off, because I'm a plus size person. But she was like, she's like a really tall, big girl.
Yeah.
So that's a different kind of plus size, I feel like.
So
I was super excited to see a plus size cosplayer on television because none of the other cosplay shows I've ever watched, and I've watched as many cosplay shows as I could sink my brain into, have had cosplayers who weren't just conventionally attractive, slender, white girls.
Yeah.
But, and Asian girls.
Like,
but,
I love you, Chloe Dykstra, but there's no denying you're a skinny white girl.
Right. It's easy. I think it's easy to cosplay when you can go in and buy stuff off the shelf and alter it for yourself. But if you're a big girl, there's so many fewer options of what you can find in thrift stores to costume with that it's really inspirational to me to see women like that.
Yeah.
And like myself doing that.
So Ruth said, I want plus size women to feel confident in going to conventions in the costumes they made. And I really liked that, not just because it establishes her goals, but I like the attention given to going to conventions in this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Leanna Vamp, one of the judges, specifically called out one of the things that was designed as being difficult, as being good to get through the weapons check at conventions, which is always a hassle.
Right. She's like, that foam shield weapons check will be okay with that.
Our next contestant was Edgar, who is from Los Angeles. Had a fairly thick Mexican accent.
Yeah, yeah.
They subtitled him like a third of the time, which was weird.
Yeah, he builds beautiful... He's a metal worker, and the pictures they were showing of his armor and stuff that he's built was beautiful. He does beautiful armor, but I think it's more SCA looking than cosplay looking.
The way he tells it, his family has a car, like a body shop or something, and because he makes the plates for cars, he's got the experience to also make plates for armor.
Sure.
Which sounds great. If you know a guy like that, make friends with him because he will make you cool armor. Next up, Jennifer, who we saw do Red Sonja and the Scarlet Witch. We did see her do Red Sonja. She didn't look a lot like Red Sonja.
I like Jennifer. Jennifer reminded me of one of those Joss Whedon characters.
A Fred.
Yeah, she's kind of a Fred. She's kind of a nice, sweet, skinny, geeky girl with glasses. She seemed super nice. Her cosplay looked amazing, and I really like the fact that her cosplay pictures were these awesome, tough-looking, outgoing characters, but then she herself, when she's not in cosplay, seems super shy and quiet.
And now there's Emily. Emily is an activities director at an assisted living facility.
And she is like 5'1".
She's under 5 feet. She said several times she's pushing 5 feet.
Yeah, she's little tiny and she's heavy set and pretty much the most adorable thing ever.
Her silhouette and proportions are very much like Rias's. I think that's safe to say.
Yes.
And
so, of course, I'm in love with her now.
The armor she made with the fur bits and stuff looks a lot like armor that Rias sketches out.
I have sketched out armor that I want to build for myself, and I'm like, I don't know if I'd ever be able to build that. And then I looked, and it, and then when she made her armor for the competition, it was the same basic armor, which made me feel good, because I'm like, yeah, if I make that armor now, at least I know it'll look cool on me.
Yeah. So everybody was assigned a random weapon in the world of Game of Thrones. So Edgar had a sword, Jennifer had a crossbow, Emily had a flail, Ruth had a shield, which is not a weapon, but whatever.
Right. I'm going to start with Eduardo. He decided
Edgar.
To make... I'm sorry about that. I had it written down wrong. I'm going to start with Edgar. He decided to make a sword because, well, metal worker, and he gets to make a sword, and that was randomly his chosen weapon. So he goes out, he starts cutting it out of metal, and he decides he's going to make some kind of alligator sword.
He found some crocodile skin and a bone and little crocodile head. So he was like, this is my theme. And he ended up doing this thing that was like 15 feet long and had two hinges so that big crocodile jaws could come out.
But the challenge was Game of Thrones. And winter is coming and there ain't no alligators in winter.
Yeah.
Another thing that happened to him was he was attaching this big old bone to be the hilt of the sword and it cracked.
Because he put in the screws too tight.
Because he didn't drill the holes right. Put the screws in too tight and cracked the bone. And because I've watched...
Because we've watched so much
Forged in Fire, my first answer was, fill that crack with epoxy, wrap it in leather, they'll never know.
Yeah, we know exactly how people normally fix
it. Normally cover this problem up.
He did go home after the first cut because his thing, it looked silly. It almost looked silly enough for me to love.
It looked silly, but it didn't look fantasy. It looked silly, but it looked like something you'd see in a... not post-apocalyptic, but like something you'd see in an 80s Roger Corman sci-fi movie.
Yeah, and I will say one thing I really like about this show, because so far I've liked all the contestants, there's only one elimination.
Right, one person gets eliminated, the other three go on to the final round.
So that means this spot is the only spot where somebody is sad, because at the end they just announce a winner and somebody is happy.
Yeah.
As opposed to like MasterChef Junior, that's always about crying children. Basically, any show except Survivor, where you hate people, eliminations are kind of a bummer.
I'm trying not to hate watch any shows this season.
Right.
That's my goal.
But you know what I mean, right? Like, I don't like seeing anybody go home sad. And the fact that this show has eliminated steps where people go home sad, I think raises my overall enjoyment of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, Ruth did a shield with a dragon head on it. And the way she made the dragon head, I think what it looked like...
What she did was she had a dragon head. She... A positive dragon head. She melted, I believe, Warbler over the dragon head to make a mold. Peeled the Warbler off and then filled the mold with two-part epoxy clay. Epoxy sculpt, I think, is what it is. I let that dry, which takes like 45 minutes. And then she had this big bony looking dragon head.
Yeah.
And then she put some LEDs in it and
stuck it to her shield. For the first round, I felt like maybe the skull could have stood out from the shield a little more. It was all the same color, but that was my only complaint. It mostly looked real cool.
Yeah, the shield looked awesome. I would have painted it differently. But then again, there's a time limit.
Yeah. Jennifer had to make a crossbow and made an awesome-looking crossbow.
It was great. And I think one of the judges said, well, it doesn't look lightweight enough. And I'm like, do you know what a crossbow is?
Yeah.
If you make it lightweight, you will die.
Yeah. And the fact that it's made out of foam and looks heavy because it looks like it's made out of an actual wooden stock, that's good. And Emily made a flail and deliberately sized everything up.
Yeah.
So that
it had this amazing, like the flail was half as tall. The flail head, if she sat on the ground next to her, would have come up to mid-thigh.
And the scale with her carrying it looked great.
Yeah, it was very Warhammer, I thought.
It was. It was a good choice.
It was a good Warhammer look.
Then going to the second part of the episode, everybody was assigned a realm. It was called a realm. It was more like a family.
Right.
Emily, because she had won, got to spin on the wheel twice, declined Dothraki, and ended up with Wildling.
Right.
Her concept from the beginning had been she's making a Stark. The way she incorporated the Wildling aspect was, This is a lost dark cousin who has gone to live with the wildlings.
Okay, fine. And that was because, yeah, she'd already put like a wolf insignia on something, so you might as well go with it.
Likewise, Ruth was given the dragon thing and she was going to be like a Targaryen hunter, but she was assigned White Walker.
So she just basically made a Targaryen hunter that had been killed beyond the wall and turned into a White Walker. Yep. Get to use the shield, get to use the concept. Let's go.
Jennifer had been making an elf crossbow user. She was assigned Baratheon. She did some hand waving and said, well, this elf is Shireen's guardian, and she's come to take revenge on Melisandre for killing Shireen. So she's working for the Baratheons? Like, it's not easy. There's not that many Baratheons left alive for her to be tied into. I thought they all did a good job of hand-waving.
Yeah, I thought they did really good with coming up with backstories for the characters. When you have to make an original character and stick it into a universe, that requires, I believe it's called lip-syncing for your life.
Yeah, that is the kind of the phrase we use when you're up, when the judges ask you, so this shield doesn't look like what we assigned you to make. Explain to me why it is. That's lip-syncing for your life. When you just have to talk fast, say, oh, no, this is totally according to the theme.
Yeah.
And not just because I like making crossbows or whatever. But that's not the part we like about the show. What I like about the show is like seeing Emily double fist heat guns.
Yeah.
And talk about how she was told to put in more realistic rivets. So what did she use?
Googly eyes.
And why did that make you happy?
It made me squeal with joy because that is how I make my artificial rivets. She did a different technique than I do, wherein she stuck the googly eye down and I think melted the warbler over it to make a lump, whereas I just glue the googly eye directly to the outside of the warbler and paint it up.
See, googly eyes are shaped just like rivets, and also we have a bunch of googly eyes. From
this time I went to the craft store and they were on sale and Monty said you can never have too many googly eyes and I wanted to prove him wrong.
I think we also got googly eyes several other times. Like, like when we go to the craft store, Rias is shopping more intently than I am, so I tend to look at the same stuff every time.
And then he says, do we need googly eyes? And I am unable to refuse.
So that's how we end up with 6 boxes of googly eyes. Also how we end up with 6 kinds of mustard in the refrigerator.
I'm going to build the cutest beholder beast you have ever seen.
I am looking forward to that so much. Now, there's a moment when people are working on their armor where they are magically finished, and it is infuriating to me.
Well, they have to edit that down.
You know,
you can't show the whole 8-hour process.
You know, when they show you how to draw the Hulk...
they show that?
Step 1, draw an oval. Step 2, draw another oval next to it. Step 3, it's the Hulk all of a sudden. How did you do that? How did you get from box 2, which is 2 ovals, to box 3, that's the Hulk? That's what happens on this show, is you see them cutting out some foam, like, here's an arc, then, oh, and here's perfectly made breastplates.
No, we got to see how some of those breastplates got made, because we got to see Jennifer lay a mannequin down, cover it with Vaseline, and melt Warbla over it.
Which everybody enjoyed.
Which everyone enjoyed.
And the next day, the Warbla had cooled and hardened. It did not come off difficult at all, and she had a perfect-looking breastplate.
Which is great if you happen to have breasts smaller than or the same size as a mannequin.
You also have to have a mannequin.
It's true. The only way I could do that was if I got like 2 basketballs.
But I like that because I like when the show can mix in at least a little bit of how-to. I don't expect it to take over the whole show, but...
Oh, I know. I get really excited when I see something that I've worked with used in a new way. For example, for the White Walker costume, Jen was like, Ruth was like, well, it's built, but it doesn't look White Walker-y enough. And she aged up the fabrics and then got a spray can of drywall spackle and started spraying it on because it looked like snow and it looked amazing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I never would have thought of that.
And it looked like somebody had just come in from it not being a fit night out for Man or Beast.
Right. And when her reveal came, It had dried a little, and so when she was walking out on the stage, pieces of it were falling off of her, and it looked like she had just come in from the snow. It looked like wet snow falling off. It was great.
There's a really good article on tested.com, that's Adam Savage's site, T-E-S-T-E-D.com, where they go over what tools are available to people in the workshop, and it's great.
I won't look at it, because it will make me sad that I don't have all the tools.
So, at the end, Emily looked great.
Yeah, her makeup was amazing.
The flail moved really well as she walked, which I think helps a lot.
She had a big scar across her face, and she looked super badass, which is great, because she's the cutest little girl. She's the cutest lady.
Rias was shamelessly rooting for Emily at this point.
Like, it's true.
There was no question. Then Jennifer came out. She had a lot of good aspects of her look, but a lot of them were hidden by the wig,
yeah,
I felt.
Yeah, she chose a really long blonde wig, and the wig covered up all the detailing on her breastplate.
And the cool shoulders.
And the cool shoulder pieces she had, and I felt like it prevented the judges from really seeing it. Also, I didn't like how monochromatic her outfit was. It was very beige.
So, I did like the antlers she had. She had a cool little antler hat.
Yeah, she made a little antler hat that I liked.
And then Ruth came out, looked so good. Like, the reveal, her silhouette was good. The, like Raya said, this little dust of snow coming off her as she walked looked great.
Her makeup was intensely scary.
Yeah. The only real mild negative was that she had these giant spalders, I believe they're called, big shoulder pieces.
Yeah, and
that were kind of bland and just there to hold up blades.
Yeah, they looked like she didn't get a chance to paint or finish them. It kind of looked like bare craft foam. And I felt like if those had been decorated, painted a little, aged up, they would have been perfect.
Yeah.
I am sure that she would have won.
I thought Ruth was going to win.
We all did.
She did not. Emily won, and Rias was so happy.
Yeah, it was kind of annoying.
You're allowed to be happy, Rias. Embrace
the only
joy.
Critique that Emily got was that the fur, because she had a big fur cape, needed to be made aged and made grosser.
Yeah,
and that takes a while. You have to get goo and mix it into the fur. You use like acrylic paints and kind of rat it up, and it was a lot of fur, and it was a timed contest.
Yeah.
I'm sure she would have done more of that,
we did see her spend some time weathering her flail and spattering red paint on it to make it clear that this is a flail that had crushed some heads. I like that.
My notes here on the reveal are, Ruth, OMFG, comma, Emily's still my favorite. Her makeup is amazing. There's snow falling off of her.
And another thing I like about this show is there's not a lot of fumfering when they announce the winner. There is a commercial break when they're waiting.
Right, but they don't say, and the winner is...
Bum, 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 bum. Emily, would you please tell Jennifer...
Who the winner is.
Like, they don't Gordon Ramsay it up. It's just after the commercial...
Yeah, I think we should call that Ramsaying.
Yeah. After the commercial, Yvette Nicole Brown just says, and the winner is Emily. Congratulations, Emily.
Yeah, and then Emily gets hugged, and the show is over.
Yep. And I think that about covers it for us.
It does. I am very much looking forward to the next Drag Race. There were no eliminations this week.
Yeah.
And then they brought in another queen, so...
They're going backwards. It's weird.
I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not sure if we're going to start having eliminations this week.
I've allowed myself to dream that this is finally the season when somebody does what I want in a competitive reality show. No eliminations.
They just earn a certain amount of points?
Yep.
That would be crazy.
Why do we need to get rid of someone every week? Why can't we see how everybody is at Snatch Game?
Because if we don't get rid of someone every week, this podcast is going to take forever.
True that. But this one isn't, because now we're done.
We are. Thank you for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye.